Good evening. Let's call to order the Board of Library Trustee meeting of January 5th, 2026 at 7:02 p.m. The city does not tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. Sunnyvale prides itself on the rich diversity of our residents. We are committed to creating a culture of belonging where members of our diverse community feel included, safe, and respected. This board meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the board can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to the agenda item being considered by the board for consent calendar or public hearing items. Speaker comments during oral communication must be limited to matters within the board's authority, generally referred to as within the board's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker comments are not related to an agenda item, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Location and online meeting details are available on the Board of Library Trustees agenda. Use the show caption buttons to view caption on Zoom. Comments on matters not on the agenda or presentation items must be submitted prior to the time I call the item for oral communications. Comments on agenda items must be submitted prior to the time I close the public hearing on the agenda item. Speakers are requested to keep their comments to the time period set for public comments for the agenda item, which will be strictly enforced. Guidelines are posted on City's website and on the Board of Library Trustee meeting agenda. Please join me in the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Recording officer, may we please have the roll call?
Yes. Chair Jetaconda?
Here.
Vice Chair Hu?
Here.
Board Member Hod?
Here.
Board Member Liu? Board Member Lam? We have four board members present.
Moving on to our first item, 260187, is there a staff presentation?
I'll do the intro. Yes, there is. As board members, I'd like to introduce one of our adult services librarians, Jason Martin, who's going to give the presentation on services for seniors.
Okay, is that better? Okay. Okay, so as Garrett said, my name is Jason Martin. I'm a librarian on the adult services team. And I'll do a quick agenda of the presentation. I'm going to talk about the city demographics with regards to seniors, some of our top level goals, what the library has to offer this group, and then I'll talk about the library's collections and our programs and services. Oh, starting with demographics, so the current city population is 159,673. And I'm going to start with people age 50 and older because that's the age that the Sunnyvale Senior Center uses, and we're in the same department as them. So age 50 and older, there are 44,223 residents, which is about 27% of the city's population. And then to paint a more detailed picture, within that group, people 65 and older would be about 20,000 people. And then within that group, there's about 9,000 people that are 75 and older. But while we're talking about age numbers, I just wanted to, some things to keep in mind. These age numbers can vary from institution to institution. The Senior Center and AARP, I think, use 50 as their cutoff. I've seen senior housing say 55 and up, and then Medicare is 65. So it can be hard to pin down the exact age of what is the definition of a senior. And this can also vary from person to person. And just a silly example of this, this is a popular meme that I've seen on the internet of Paul Rudd and Wilford Brimley. And both of them are 52 years old in this picture. So just something to keep in mind. So instead of trying to define age brackets, I thought it'd be better to focus on our broader goals. So I was thinking about this, and all of the programs that we offer, I think they could fall into one or both of these categories. They help seniors learn new skills or stimulate their mind, or reduce isolation and loneliness. And this second category is especially helpful for seniors that live alone or are retired. We offer programs that can get people out of the house, and we provide social connections and communal experiences. And then the last goal on the slide is more of a future goal, which is to add new services for people with dementia and their caregivers. And I'm going to be talking about that at the very end. So before I talk about programs, I didn't want to lose sight of the fact that a lot of people come to the library just to borrow materials. So I have some quick collection numbers. We have 21,825 active cardholders that are 50 years old or over. And then some of the formats that we offer for materials that are useful for seniors, we have 2,964 large print books, 2,817 physical audiobooks. And these are books on CD, which are useful for people who need audiobooks but haven't mastered the Libby and Cloud Library apps that we have. But for those who have, we have 45,298 downloadable books, audio or ebooks. And these are ones that we've selected and are in the library catalog through Libby or Cloud Library. So I'm going to talk about programs that are specifically targeted for seniors. We have the Senior Center book group, and I took over that group this year, so that's run by me. We meet once a month in person in the Senior Center, and the turnout is pretty steady. We usually have about 15 to 17 people each month, including two women who are in their 90s. And it's a very social group. I can never start the meeting on time because everyone's always chatting beforehand. And there's some people that I know carpool together to the group, and there's another group that goes out to lunch afterwards. So it is a very social gathering. We just started this year the Classic Film Club, and you can see some of the movies we showed recently. That's run by my coworker Jack, who's a film buff, and he gives an introduction before each movie, and he also leads the discussion afterwards with discussion questions. So it's also an interactive program. And another program that we used to do in the past and we're bringing back, actually starting this Thursday, January 8th, is Lunchtime Librarian. And this is where one of the adult services librarians will set up in the lobby of the Senior Center for an hour, and people can talk to us. They can sign up for library cards. We'll have a cart with books and other formats they can check out, and they could also return items to the Senior Center instead of having to go to the library, and if they don't want to make an extra trip. And we also have outreach and outreach materials and upcoming program flyers and things like that. And then some other programs we offer that are more educational. We have Get Connected, which meets every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. And this is where people can come in with specific questions or problems they're having with their phones or other technology, and they get one-on-one tutoring, one-on-one help with that. A similar program we started this year is we partnered with a local high school student, and he does a program that he calls Easy Tech Seniors, which is more of a classroom setting where it's focused on one topic, and it's unlike being one-on-one with Get Connected. It's a group all learning the same topic. And it's also very interactive. One fun story from our first program, which was a Zoom class, a class on how to use Zoom. At the end of the program, Mahar, the high school student, he set up a Zoom meeting on the screen, and we could tell when each person in the group figured out how to join because their face would pop up on the screen and they would wave to the camera. So it was kind of a fun way to make them feel good about mastering a new skill. And we've partnered with the Alzheimer's Association. We had a program, there's a picture of it here, in May that was very well attended. And we have another one this Saturday, which is about healthy aging and brain health. And we anticipate more programs with them in the future. And I wanted to quickly talk about some general adult programs that are not targeted at seniors, but have a wide generation appeal, including seniors. So we have arts and crafts programs. We have a sewing lab twice a week. And the librarian who runs the sewing lab sent me this photo, and he shared a story about the woman in the photo. He said that she was really happy and proud to learn a new skill. So she actually, the reason her phone is on the table, she actually FaceTimed with her son to show off that she was making something on the sewing machine. And then we have Zen coloring, where we have adult coloring books and colored pencils, and we play relaxing music. So it's kind of a good wellness activity that people do on their own, but it's also a communal group setting. We have another book group that meets online, and that group is helpful because it happens at night, so it's accessible to adults that work during the day. But because it's online, it's also accessible to seniors that can't drive anymore. And we also have talks and lectures. Some of the ones we've had, we partner with the UC Master Gardeners, the Asian Art Museum. We have virtual author talks through the Library Speakers Consortium. And we've also had them on astronomy, financial planning. And there's one happening right now on emergency preparedness in the program room. Another service that we offer that's really important is called homebound delivery. And this is where people who can't come into the library in person, they get interviewed by one of the librarians about what kind of books they like to read. And then they get paired with a staff member that will select books or other media for them every month. And it gets delivered to them. And they also get a rating sheet that they could rate the books, and that helps us kind of fine tune our selections. And my favorite quote from one of our clients, she said, "The library keeps me breathing and smiling." And one last service we offer is we offer opportunities for seniors to volunteer at the library. I mentioned Get Connected earlier. These are four of our Get Connected volunteers. Most of them are retired from the tech industry. And the volunteer on the right, Bob, also volunteers every Monday with the ESL conversation group. And we have a literacy program called Level Up Literacy, and nine of the tutors are over 50, and six of those are retired. And I asked Bob on the right if he could share what he likes about volunteering, and he shared this with me. He says he likes to see patrons, this is about the ESL conversation group, not Get Connected. He said he likes to see patrons use their English in a setting where they can take their time to compose a sentence and feel successful in expressing themselves. He looks forward to seeing regular participants gaining confidence over time and having fun with language. He also likes hearing about their home country. And he says, "I like it whenever they tell me thank you and I could tell they mean it." And now I'm going to talk about our future initiative, future goal for providing caregiver support. One bit of background information about the first bullet point. So Trenton Hill at the Senior Center is putting together a senior advisory committee to help staff identify goals for the next 3 years. And this is part of the city's age-friendly action plan. So this will be a good opportunity for us to partner with them and get insight about our services and what kind of services are working and what they would like to see more of. That being said, in the previous action plan focus group, they did a series of community focus groups, and one of the themes that they found was that people said there weren't enough services for people with dementia and their caregivers in the city. And I also attended a session on this at the Public Library Association conference that was related to this, and some of the information they shared that's also available on the Alzheimer's Association website is that caregivers are often unpaid because it's often a family member, and it's usually on average about 31 hours per week of work. And the stress of caregiving can lead to clinical depression, and it also can take a physical toll with health issues. And one of the first steps in addressing this in the near future is by adding memory kits to our collection. So we were recently awarded a Pacific Library Partnership grant, and those funds are going to be used, or have already have already been used, to purchase memory kits for the collection. There's a sample photo there from a library in Tennessee, but I also brought a newly assembled example of one of our kits. We're going to have 9 different varieties of kits, so this is just one of them, but it'll give you an idea. The kits have activities that the person with dementia can do on their own. Some of them are like mentally stimulating, others are more relaxing. We have a reusable watercolor paint set, and this allows the caregiver to take a breather, have time to themselves. But the kits also have activities that are interactive games and activities that the person with dementia can do with their caregiver. And this is important because sometimes the caregiver can lose sight. They can start to think of their loved one as a patient and not as a family member or loved one. So these activities give them a chance to spend time together on more of a social level, which can be important. And we, as part of the grant, we're going to promote the memory kits in a variety of ways. My coworker and I, the senior center has a caregiver support group on Tuesday mornings. So my coworker and I are going to attend one of the meetings and demonstrate the memory kits to them. And another, probably the most exciting part of the grant is we're going to have teens, volunteers, and the Teen Advisory Board do showcases at the senior center, and also work with seniors at various senior care centers in the area. And so they'll demonstrate the kits, and this will be a fun intergenerational program that's good for the teens and good for the seniors as well. And that concludes the prepared part of the presentation, but if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Do any board members have questions or comments for staff? Vice Chair Hu?
Sure. I just wanted to say that I really like that our library is emphasizing supporting all of our populations, especially seniors and caregivers. You know, this isn't something that I really think about in my day to day. I'm not at that age yet. I'm not caregiving for anyone myself, but you know, it's important that someone is thinking of these, and that our library is going out to, you know, to these populations and getting that feedback, and now putting together these cool memory kits. You know, to facilitate, you know, this these populations getting the most out of the library, I think is wonderful. And then, you know, one thing that I feel like I say every time, but I really like that, you know, the library is committed to holding these social events where people can come together and use different library materials, you know, with each other, right? So, you know, whether that's sharing in a classic film or reading a book, and I think all of these are really great ways to, you know, build the social fabric of our city and, you know, maintain our civil society. I think that's really wonderful. One thought that I have, and I'm just sort of curious if maybe you or someone else can speak to this, is about the way that new things get added to this. And specifically, something that I think about is, you know, we're strapped for resources. Everyone's strapped for resources. You know, that's always the limiting factor, whether it's money, whether it's time, staff time, I should say, or something of that nature. And what I do wonder about is, you know, what would a model look like for the library to be a facilitator of these types of things for seniors to go and or seniors or other populations to host among themselves, right? So, you know, if someone says, hey, this is actually a really popular book and I want to put together a group to, you know, do it, could it be done on an ad hoc basis so that, you know, hey, we're not using library resources on something that, you know, maybe we don't think has a place in our collection or something like that, but can now reach more people because it's through the library and you guys have such an excellent outreach network. So that was just my thought on that. And I'm really happy to get this presentation from you guys and hear about the excellent initiatives.
Off the top of my head, I think the limiting factor to doing more of that is the program room that we have is very, what's the word? It's always in demand. So what's that? Well utilized, yes. It can be hard to find an open time slot. And we do have a study room, but that only fits 8 people. So I think that would be the thing that if we had more community rooms and rooms that people can use, that would help make that happen with more kind of ad hoc groups, like you were saying. Anyone else want to add anything?
Yeah, I'll add one thing. I mean, I think you raise a good point, and you sort of asked the question about sort of like, how do we decide what things we will do, knowing that resources are limited? And I think that there's a long tradition of being a source of to seed ideas and start things, you know, get things going. And then hope that, you know, be a catalyst for the community, and then hope, to your point, that if the idea really takes root and people love this thing, that, you know, maybe it will kind of grow legs of its own, right? And will live outside the library. You know, we can start book clubs, and, you know, but in a perfect world, book clubs and people get a gathering to talk about, you know, issues and things they're reading is something that happens organically. But I think part of what our role in the community is to foster a community of reading, a community of inquiry, a community of asking questions and having conversations about things, right? And so that as we build that sense that this community in Sunnyvale is that type of place, then we will basically, you know, cultivate the soil for more things to happen organically, you know, that don't have to be part of what the library does. Any of those things then allow us to free capacity so we can try another new thing that maybe the community wouldn't do on its own, but we can be the catalyst for that. So I think that is something that we're always thinking about. How can we use our resources to try new things and to put things out in the community to really cultivate that culture?
Yeah, thanks for that. I mean, you know, I think that that's pretty evident across, you know, the sorts of programs that you guys have and the responses, you know, from community members and just what I've seen in my time on this body. I think specifically what I'm sort of talking about is like, you know, how can we maybe start things with the express purpose of handing them off or on an ad hoc basis so that it's like, hey, you know, we're not committing a great deal of resources to this, right? We're hopefully not committing too much staff time either. Just something where it's like, hey, you know, sometimes, and to your point that you'd said it, right, where it's like, okay, well, let's lay the groundwork. Let's make sure that the soil is fertile so that, you know, when someone wants to put that seed in, so to speak, you know, it can sprout into the beautiful program and, you know, community event that we want it to become. So I'm really glad to hear that that's already being taken into account. So thank you. That's it for me.
There's one kind of related point that I might add. There's another program that we offer called the Silent Book Club. And for that program, people can bring any book that they happen to be reading at the time. And they do introductions, and then we have an hour of silent reading together. And then there's optional social time after that where people can talk about what they read or talk about what they like to read. So it's a little more welcoming to people who maybe don't like structured or aren't drawn to the books that we choose for the book club. So it's a little bit related to what you're saying, where people can drop in and read whatever they want and meet other people in the community. So yeah.
Board member Holland.
Thanks. That was really interesting. I have to say my first reaction, I'm going to start from the end for the caregiver. My first reaction was like, why is that a library thing? Like what? I mean, like this, like a service obviously that people need, but sort of why does it fall under the library? But the more you talked about it, I could sort of see how, yeah, like this is the kind of thing that our library does. So it does make sense. And I feel like it's sort of like the continuation of like, we want our library to be a service from, you know, from when we have the babies coming in for, you know, the baby story time till our seniors until, you know, so yeah, it actually makes sense when you think about it. So thank you for that. And I have two sort of more like practical kind of questions. So the classic film clubs, is that at the library or at the senior center?
That's in the library program room at the library.
And then I know you presented it as something that obviously it's happening during the day and, you know, most people adults who work will not be able to show up, but it's like, Are we doing like reverse carding at the door? Like, do you have to be over a certain age to attend, or could anybody come into this?
Yes, so yeah, all of our programs for seniors, any adult can attend. So
Any.
it's at the, we usually put that on the
Okay.
web calendars. We'll say something like, this program was planned with older adults in mind, but all adults are
Okay.
welcome. And we do get people who are home, like parents who are home during the day or, and want to do a daytime
Yeah, I feel like I'm
activity. Yeah.
gonna come one day during on my work from home day, and I'm gonna go watch a movie at the
Yeah.
library. Like, it's research for work. It's at the library, you know. Nobody needs to know. And then just one other question about the audiobooks. If I remember correctly, in one of our previous presentations, when we talked about the collection, we were saying how one of the things that we're kind of phasing out is the music on C the CDs. We're not purchasing anymore because they're not really getting used. I feel like the audiobooks fall under a different category. And are we still growing that collection of audiobooks that are on CD, or is it only the ones that come from our streaming? And yeah.
That's a great question. Shaughnessy Dunkley, Supervisor Library Services Manager for Adult Services. It is being, it's not being phased out, and it's not growing a lot because a lot of our money is going towards streaming and online content. So it's at a nice level. And so we're continuing to add to it. It's just not growing or dissipating. I don't know if that helps.
No, that helps. I mean, but so you are still purchasing new stuff
Yes,
for
that's
that.
correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. No, that's great. No, because see, we know that the whole tech part is the difficult part. So if we can give it to people in other ways,
Oh, yeah,
that's great.
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then if we don't have something or if people aren't able to use our materials, we can also do a referral to the California State Library's Library for the Blind, where they can get audiobooks as well.
And can you get also do can you ILL
Yes, we
audiobooks?
can.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So all right, great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I have a little bit of data that the tech services librarian gave me. So in the last year, audio books on CD, they circled 3,432 times. So that's checkouts and renewals, which is about 116% of the, if you do a ratio for number of items versus circs per year. And so it is still active. And I've heard that they do get used a lot for homebound delivery. So that's another value that they have. Oh, and one last thing I wanted to add on that topic is I mentioned the Easy Tech Seniors class. One of the classes that we did was actually teaching people how to sign up for Libby and use the ebook. So that'll help people transition for from CD to downloadable.
I do that at least once a week for my friends. So, yeah,
Yeah.
I get it.
Thank you, Board Member Hunt. Board Member Lam.
So I don't have any questions per se. I just want to make a comment that it's really heartwarming to see all the programs that you all are developing and fostering at the library. I mean, I think it's long been the case that the library's evolved from a place where people borrow books to really a place, a third place that fosters community. And you can see it from all of the sewing clubs, the film clubs, the book clubs, the ESL, and it's just so nice to see. Especially in the age where everyone's on their phones all day. It's like these are real people IRL. So that's kind of cool.
Thank you, Board Member Lam. Thank you, Jason, for this wonderful presentation. And before I have a few clarifying questions. Happy New Year to everybody. I think it's a great program. I'm particularly very all-time favorite of mine is the homebound delivery. I think that shows that our city is so inclusive of all the patrons. I have one simple question. Or clarification. So we said this is a new kit, right? Like this is something new we're bringing in, or was it existing?
Of
Like the kits, yeah.
the memory kits. These
Yeah.
are new. So this one, it still needs to be cataloged and barcoded. So I just put together kind of a prototype example as a visual aid. But yeah, we're still receiving all the different items and putting them together. Yes.
Wonderful. And we're gonna have 9 of these kits.
There's gonna be 20 kits total, but there's 9 types of kit, if that makes sense. Yeah. There's two or three copies of each variety. And, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, so what I was thinking about, how would be the circulation be? Would it be a long waiting time, or is it easy to, this is Library of Things, right?
Library of Things,
is it
yeah.
easy to borrow? How does that work?
Oh,
is it like sewing machines have a long wait time, right? So is it going to be similar to that, or is it easy for caregivers to actually borrow them?
Yeah, we're not sure what the demand will be yet, just because they haven't been added yet. But I did talk to another library in the area to get a sense of that has memory kits, to get a sense of how they were doing. And they said that at first they weren't circling well because they were kind of out of sight, but once they put them in a prominent spot, they've been getting checked out more often. And we haven't talked about it totally, but I'm guessing we probably won't have them out on display, so we'll have to promote them in other ways, but so people know about them.
Wonderful. And I must say that I really think it's a great idea to have teens in getting involved in this program. I think that's a wonderful idea. Looking forward to hear about it. Thank you so much.
You know, this is just sort of came off the top of my head while we were talking about these kits again. You know, I think it's a wonderful idea. I think personally, and I don't know, you know, you guys are the professionals here. Would it be possible to have like one that permanently lives at the library, or like a rotating thing, so people could use them at the library and then, you know, they're accessible when people do come in? Because I think that that's an important need. And then in theory, right, you'd also be able to get more sort of usage out of them because they're in the centralized place. People are coming expressly to the library. And I think that would be a big boon, right? You know, perhaps they could go into one of the small few rooms that we do have and make use of that or something. Because, you know, I think when I look at like the sewing machines, right, being able to have the space that again is facilitated by you guys to get that usage out of, you know, this, this equipment, I think is really valuable. And doing the same thing for these kits, especially, you know, once people know about them and they're promoted, I think would be excellent. So that's just a quick little note of feedback that I have.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much, Jason. Our next item, 260188, is there a staff presentation?
Yes, there is. Happy New Year to you, Garrett Kuramoto, Deputy Director of Library Services. And today we're going to talk a little bit about Lakewood. Mostly what we're going to do today is I'm going to take you on a little bit of a visual tour of the site. I'm going to show you a lot of photos so you can see what the building is looking like right now, at least as of about a week ago or so. hopefully that'll get you excited. We'll pause in a couple places and talk about things that are going to be happening there. But mostly we just wanted to share with you the exciting progress that's being made towards completion of the building. So just to set the stage a little bit, just as a reminder, the concept design for the branch looks a little bit like this. The branch will be on the Lakewood School property, in between Lakewood School, which you can see actually is up there in that image to the right corner, is the school, and then Lakewood Park and all the fields and everything and the baseball field to the other side. So it's kind of sandwiched in between the school and the park. Just a couple milestones of how we got to this place. You know, back in 2020, we did studies and came to agreements with the school districts on how to partner to utilize the land and space and build this branch on that space as well, with a lot of community input. Took a couple years. Of course, the pandemic was in a delaying factor in that, but eventually we did get to completion of design and the proper permitting, and then we started in 2024 with groundbreaking. And some of you were there. A very exciting day to get started with that. Oops. Should I pull? Oh, there we go. So what happened last year? We made a lot of really exciting progress. Obviously, construction continued all throughout the year. The contractors and teams have been just really, really working hard to get the building as far as it is now, which you'll see in the next few slides. We also submitted our initial operating budget to the city, which was approved in full. So we feel like we have enough resources to get this branch started with the proper level of hours, staffing, and resources to provide collections and programs. So about collections, we are very, very close to completing the ordering of all of the materials that are planned to go into the library. We are, we'll obviously are reserving a little bit of resource so that we can do some last minute ordering so that when we do open the building, we'll get some really new books, things that came out, you know, within that month or so. Obviously, a lot of things that we're ordering have to be either published or slightly pre-pub for now. But we've ordered on just about, I got a recent update, almost 25,000 physical items that have already been ordered that will go into the collection for opening day. Super exciting. And then another major, major milestone for us, obviously, is securing the staffing. And so to that end, we did post the recruitment for the new branch manager position, the library services manager. It closed just before the new year. And we're now in the process of reviewing the applications, and we'll be conducting interviews later this month with a goal of hiring and bringing our new manager on board, perhaps in the month of February. So then they'll hit the ground running and really provide some new energy to get us to opening day and beyond. So let's take a little bit of a look at the building and what we expect to see happening in there. Just as a reminder, this is the floor plan. We can kind of break the library down into two halves, right? So we have on the right side, you see, you can look at your screen there, but if you see on the right side, that half is what we would consider the library portion. It's the color scheme here is actually about the flooring. This was a flooring plan that was very clear, but it kind of shows you mostly the green is the library portion of the building. And then the blue areas are, and a little bit of the purple, you could kind of consider that to be the learning center side, which are the various program rooms and classrooms that are dedicated for the school district partners. One room for the Sunnyvale School District and one room for the Fremont Union High School District, who would have priority access to those rooms, but when they are not in use by the districts, would be available for general library programming as well. So let's take a look at, point this there. Yeah, okay. So let's do a little slideshow, shall we? From the street, this is kind of what you see with our nice little sign that shows that the branch library is coming in 2026. And let's move on to the site. It is a very active work site right now. There's a lot of heavy equipment, a lot of materials out. Obviously, weather is a major concern for us right now. Don't love what I'm seeing today in particular, but we know that the contractors are really racing. They understand the importance of getting some critical parts done ahead of bad weather so that we can stay on track. As of right now, you know, spoiler alert, as we're talking about a potential opening day, it is too early to pin down a specific opening day. There's still too many steps along in the construction process for us to definitively pin down a date that we can, you know, really start to stick to, sign contracts for as far as programming, things like that. So we're trying to maintain a level of flexibility to mitigate against potential delays in the construction that may primarily be caused by bad weather, where we have to pause certain activities because it just can't be done in the rain or it has to be covered. But as we go around the building, you'll see that there is some good progress being made to weatherproof this building. So again, active work site, construction workers on site every weekday from basically dawn to dusk. They're out there working on different areas of the site. One of the major things that's being worked on right now is also utilities outside the building. And so that's where you see some of these holes in the ground where they're still working to run the various conduits to carry the different utilities. And then, of course, working with our utility partners to arrange for inspections, permitting, all that sort of work. And then here's one nice view kind of the from the this would be from the looking from the northeast to the southwest at the building. So let's take a little walk around the perimeter, starting from that corner. Let's walk around the building and see what we have to see. So starting over here, this is actually the staff workroom through that doorway there, staff entrance. As we work our way down along that wall, we see here those windows are actually into the teen area and one of the teen study rooms. Some of the windows to the right are actually looking into the adult reading area. Continuing around to the rear of the building, again, those windows are also looking into the teen room. And then the kind of open wall there is, it will be a large glass wall that will basically be the rear of the library looking into the reading area and marketplace where we'll have new collections, popular items. This is down to the southwest corner, and this is actually off of the children's room. So the children's room is in that corner of the library. We're calling it the kids space. And one of the really exciting features about the kids space is that there will be sort of an indoor-outdoor. It'll be an enclosed area, but open air. And so the hope there is that parents and kids who want to get a little bit of fresh air can go outside without having to leave the building completely. And also parents can feel very secure knowing that it's enclosed and the kids can't just run off into the park. This is a little closer view of what that indoor-outdoor space will kind of look like. And then as we continue to our left, this is actually an outdoor area off of the district classrooms, the Sunnyvale School District and Fremont Union High School District classrooms. Behind us is actually Lakewood School, and so that'll provide easy access from the school site potentially onto to access the school district through a fence. This is another sort of indoor-outdoor space. This is going to be a little patio that'll be off of the Learning Center. I'm not quite sure exactly what to call it, a little bit of a lobby where sort of several doors to the different program rooms would be. And so this is another place that could potentially people get some fresh air when they're attending a program. Working our way down to the northwest corner, to the left is actually straight ahead. What you're seeing is the walls of one of the large program rooms. So this would be the largest of the program rooms through there. And then continuing down to the left are the other program rooms. So those there'll be large glass windows looking into the various program rooms through those portals. This is basically the same vantage point, but from the other angle. And then continuing on to the entry forecourt, this partially covered forecourt area. This is a view of the outside of the makerspace. So the other programming space in that Learning Center wing is the makerspace, which is off of the entry forecourt there. And then this is a view of the other side, and that large portal there is actually the holds room. And another really exciting feature of this branch is that we will offer after hours access to holds pickup. So there's both an inside and an outside door to the holds room. We'll put items in there. People will be able to scan their library cards to gain access to that room even after the library's closed. And there will be a self-check machine in there where they can pull items from the shelf, check them out, and leave. And then this is a view of the main entrance. And so let's proceed inside the building. So I've just highlighted what the area we're going to start with here. Imagine our backs are to the wall to the left there. And just got a little bit of a panoramic view here. So you can see to the left there is the main entrance that we just came from. And to the right is the rear of the library and the school in the background there. Let's take a little closer look at this spot, right about a little past where this green machine is. And that's about the area where the service desk is going to be. So as you enter the library, just to your left, you'll be greeted by staff at a service desk. And if you are a member of the staff, this is what you would see from that vantage point. To the left, you can see the entry to the Learning Center wing. To the front, you would see the main entrance to the library. And to the right, you would see the adult area for gathering and collections. Also, then off to the left, oh, actually, before we leave the space, did want to point out this is the interior entrance to that holds room. So when the building is open, we would roll open a door, and you would access the building like normal from inside the library. At closing time, we will close that door, and then the access will be from the outside only. And that's, again, the outside view of that holds room. Let's proceed around where that holds room is to the staff workroom, which you see up here in this corner. So this is where we'll have our staff, along with an automated materials handling system, very similar to what we have at the main library, but very small, just a few bins, because we're obviously not expecting that much traffic, but we do want to utilize technology in this space. Another angle of the staff workroom shows you the branch manager's office to the left there, and then the staff break room or lounge to the right, and kitchen. Working our way around, now we're going to take a look at the adult area. So this is looking into the adult area. Where I'm standing in this photo is right about where the public PCs would be located on the main floor. So straight ahead of us, you see this is actually, there would be, imagine stacks of books for collections for adults. And then to the left, you'll see our tech skills lab, which will basically be a computer lab. And to the right, some of our private study rooms. So this is a closer view of what will be the tech skills lab. And then turning around, we'll see three of the four study rooms that are planned for this building. The three portals you kind of see there in the wall. And then just wanted to give you a sense of, I'm showing you a lot of spaces, but there is a lot of really interesting work being done. It's far beyond my technical expertise to explain what this is, but it's very complicated. But it's preparation and conduiting for the wiring and electrical that's going to go into the building. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of tech. One reason in particular I wanted to show this study room is because the study rooms are going to be wired up with monitors on the wall, so that somebody could plug in their laptop and share that space and show something off of it, as well as potentially for teleconferencing. So I'm really looking forward to a good utilization of these spaces. And then one other little area that's off of the, to the left actually of the adult area is the creation lab. So that little portal to the right is a creation lab, which is basically, it's going to be equipped with a sort of a computer with a suite of digital creation software. Think Adobe products to design and maybe do some recording or some graphic design in there. And then the portal to the left there is actually the entrance to the Friends alcove, which we're working with the Friends to identify what kind of activities and potentially book sale expansion or marketing of Friends events to go in on that space. Okay, let's continue our way around and look at the teen space in this bottom corner of the branch here. And this is the teen space. And you can see that little doorway to the left there, that is the fourth study room, which is actually accessible off of the teen space from that room. Okay, now let's take a look at children's, which is this area over here. We'll start from outside in the marketplace area to look at the main entrance. You'll see a nice little artistic kid space arch over that archway. As we continue in, you'll see a couple different views of a really, really, I mean, to me, the amazing feature about this is the amount of space that we're dedicating towards children's services in a branch of this size. It's really, I mean, almost half of the library side space is dedicated for children and family use, which, as you know, is really quite commensurate with what we're seeing as far as our business. And so I think this is a lot of how we're right-sizing, right, for the type of services we want to provide at this library. This is just another view. You can see the entryway to the right there, but this is the other direction. And then this is the path that leads you to that indoor-outdoor space that I was describing before. And then standing in that doorway, this is the other side of that. So this is what you would see from inside as looking out. Okay, so now let's leave the library side of the building and look at the learning center side. So let's take a look at some of those program rooms. So we're going to start at the bottom corner there and imagine we're entering from the main lobby. So this is the sort of hallway towards that. One other really exciting feature about this branch is that there will also be a closable door. This doorway will be closed. So at when the library closes for the night, we'll close that area down, and that will essentially lock off the learning center side and the program spaces from the library side. So that way we would be able to host programs in the program rooms after normal library operating hours. And we're really looking forward to that expanded access to those places. It'll be great for community group meetings and other, you know, programs that just don't really fit in the time frame or with the number of hours we're going to be open. So let's proceed down. First door on the right down the hallway is the makerspace. So this is a view of the inside of the makerspace. And then just one view from the other direction, from the front wall, looking into it. I also did want to show that huge pile of architectural plans, which is just one of the documents. They use a lot of iPads out there also, but they also sometimes just need to see something really, really big and in person and be able to scribble some notes down. So that's, again, a very active work site. As we proceed down the hallway, the next programming area is what we call the community room. And so this is a large program area that we'll be able to use for different types of programs. And then on the other side of that room is what we're calling the Lakewood Program Room. That would be the larger of the two rooms. Now, one of the most exciting features also of this is that there is, oops, sorry, got it out of sequence there. Whoa. That's it. Done. No. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. Start there. One of the most exciting features of this program space is that there'll be a movable partition wall. So we'll be able to close it off. And so we can have two programs running concurrently in the community room and the program room. But at times we'll be able to open up the wall and actually create an even larger space for a really, really big program. And that will represent the largest program space we have available in the branch. So we're really excited about that possibility. And this is just a close-up of where the wall will be stored when it's not in use, and then we'll open it up for that use. This is that sort of lobby area I was talking about. So as you go to the various rooms, this is where you would there'll be some furniture for people to sit and gather outside of the rooms. But those portals to the right are the program room and the community room, and then out to the middle there is that outdoor area, that patio area I was talking about, and then to the left is the Fremont Union High School District classroom, and then just like to the side of me would be the public restrooms. So the restrooms have been really well designed to be on the learning center side, so they'll be accessible after hours to support potential after hours programming. And then last but not least, the two district rooms you see highlighted here. First, the Fremont Union High School District room on this side, and then the Sunnyvale School District room on this side. And similarly, a feature in there, they will also have a movable partition wall. So if in the chance that there's programs not running in either of those rooms, we could potentially open up for, again, another large scale program in that space. So that's your little tour. What we're going to be continuing to do is coordinating very closely with construction to be monitoring, mitigating delays, and really trying to, as soon as possible, pin down a grand opening date for this branch. We are still we're still aiming at a spring opening, but obviously, again, there are too many steps to narrow that down to a specific date. You see stakeholder site tours. I know that as interesting as this is to look at these photos, I know you really want to get onto site and see this with your own eyes, and I want to take you out there too. Obviously, right now is not a good time. It's really gross out there and really muddy. But when things settle down a little bit and it's a little bit nicer to be out there, as well as obviously they've been racing to get things done. There's been a lot of like subcontractors on site crossing paths, a lot of really tight coordination. So it's not been the safest site to be out lately. So as things settle down a little bit, we will schedule some tours, and so I'll be in touch with you all to let you know when you can come on site with me, and I'll guide you around the building. We're also working to finalize our operational policies and plans with the management team right now, filling the remaining staff positions, in particular after we hire that branch manager. The manager will then be a major part of helping to hire the new employees that will go into the Lakewood branch, and then, of course, planning for the grand opening and beyond. And just a nice little view of the concepts to IRL. All right, and I'm open for questions.
Do any board members have comments or questions for staff? Board member Lamb.
My goodness, I have so many questions. This is so incredibly exciting. Thank you so much for the update. It's great to see the photos. I'll just maybe go down each question one by one. So you first mentioned that you started ordering books for the collection and such. How do you determine the books for the Lakewood Library? Are they intended to complement the collection that's already at the main library, or do you get, you know, second copies for Lakewood as well? How do you determine that?
A little of both. For the opening day collection, we are, you know, it's unusual because there are certain things that are always in your collection. They may be not new or bestsellers, but you need to have them in your collection to have a comprehensive collection. So we've looked at sort of comprehensiveness, making sure that we have the right titles that should exist in any library, regardless of size. But then we also have tried to make selections that are specific to the neighborhood we have and the area. We've really invested in world languages, Spanish and Chinese collections in particular, in this area. But you know, because it is small and because we do have such a robust collection at Maine, it's fair to say that many of the titles will probably be similar to titles that we have in the main library collection. It's not going to be an entirely new thing, but there might be some novel titles that are very specific to that. One really good another good feature we plan is to have transit and essentially intra-library loan. So you can hold books, you can place a hold for pickup at Lakewood, and it might be fulfilled by a copy that's actually at Maine. Mm-hmm. Maybe we have one copy at Lakewood, but we have four copies at Maine. And so if one of the main copies is available first, we would actually pull that, transit it over, and then it would go onto the hold shelf there at Lakewood. The same could happen vice versa, but we tend to think that most items will flow from the large to the small, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Makes a lot of sense. My second question is, in terms of the square footage, this place looks very spacious. Of course, you know, looking at construction pictures probably doesn't quite give you a reality version. But anyway, how does the square footage compare for the main library versus Lakewood Library?
The main library building is about 60,000 square feet. This building, it'll be about 20, a little over 20,000 square feet. And then, of course, you know, think of it, it's not exactly, but divided about in half, right, from the library operational side and then the learning center side where all those program rooms. So about 10,000 square feet of sort of operational library space. And then about half of that dedicated to the children's room, and then the rest really for everything else, the adults, the teens, the computers, and some of those other spaces. So you're right, on paper and even in some of these pictures, it does look pretty spacious. When you actually do stand in the space, you do realize like it's not huge. This will be a small library. This will be a neighborhood branch. It is not designed to take the place or replace a main library. I think we've been very clear about that. However, I think one of the things is, as you can tell, a lot of the spaces have been really, really thoughtfully planned and designed with flexibility in mind, potentially changing purposes, right? So this library, we intend for it to be very vital for many, many decades to come, and that we can get a lot of use out of a limited amount of space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. I guess it looks different when it doesn't have all the furniture and the books, and right now it's just open spaces.
Definitely, yeah. Yes, the book stacks will take up a lot of room. The furniture will take up a lot of room. But you know, those are the places that people will be and will live in, right? And so I think those are important. But yes, it does take up space. But again, trying to really thoughtfully place those things and you know have a lot of stuff that's movable, you know, too. So it doesn't always have to be there forever if the needs of the collection and the needs of the community change over time,
If I
right?
can just add to that as well, if you think about it, you know, if there's some major assignment that comes up in the Lakewood area and we don't have a large collection at Lakewood, but we have a large collection of those materials at Main Library, we can temporarily shift them to that library so they're available there. So, you know, the good thing about it, us being a small system, once this opens, is that we can be pretty nimble. So even though it might not have that collection now, it could have that collection for the month that it needs that collection.
Right. So there's a lot of flexibility. That makes sense. Now you mentioned that there's a creation lab and also a maker space. Are those different things?
Yes, the creation lab is think of it as like a small closet with a high-powered computer, a specialty computer in there for doing more digital, like digital design work. The Maker Lab is more of a hands-on, physical creation space. So we'll have things in there like 3D printers, laser cutters, some potentially some woodworking things. So things you're actually making with your hands versus on a computer. There will be some technology in the maker space to facilitate that, but it's really more of the hands-on versus the digital.
Got it. Okay. And then my last question, I promise for now, is hours. Are the Lakewood Library's hours expected to be similar to that of the main library?
No, they're going to be shorter hours. I forget the number off the top of my head.
We were looking at 52 hours for Lakewood. We have planned for 6 day service, Monday through Saturday. At this time, we are looking at potentially 2 nights, and maybe don't hold me to this, but maybe Monday, Tuesday, and then we move to more of a 10 to 6 schedule for Wednesday through Saturday. If we see that Monday, Tuesday is just not very busy, maybe we'll look at Wednesday, Thursday night. So again, we want to see where the traffic is and adapt to that. So we're starting with that 52 hour point when it comes to the number of hours. We will regulate the hours once we've been open for a few months to see if that's where we need to land. We could also look at different hours during the summer if there's a different need. We really do want to keep our options open and not just say we're going to do exactly what we're doing at Maine.
Got it. So it sounds like the main library is expected to open for much longer hours in comparison to Lakewood Library. Like, for instance, the main library opens every weeknight, Monday through Thursdays. It's open on both days of the weekends, etc.
Exactly, yes. The main library is a 7-day operation every morning, well, except for Sunday. We open only afternoons on Sunday, but 6-day mornings. And then, yes, evening hours, Monday through Thursday, until 9, which is, somewhat late.
And the difference too is, remember, this is on a school campus. So that is the unknown factor in terms of the usage. So at this point, one of the conversations we've been having is, even though we might technically open at 10 o'clock, we know students could be there as early as, 7 something or 8 o'clock in the morning. So we're exploring the idea of having more of a soft opening between maybe 8 and 10, where students can come in, but it's not like the robust public open hours that we might have. So these are all things that, we're trying to decide what's going to work best for the kids there and that neighborhood.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This is so incredibly exciting. Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Lam.
I mean, just sort of like a follow-up to what you just said now, I was just wondering, does Lakewood Elementary have a library in on their campus
They
in the school?
do.
They do. So you're just sort of saying we'd open it early because, like, the people will be around, parents have been bringing kids to school. This is our chance to get them into the library, or the younger siblings weren't in school yet, kind of thing. And you don't know.
It'll be.
We don't know what we don't know.
We don't know. Yeah, it's all. It's an unknown.
But all of those things potentially, yes. You know, we think that that could be. There might also be interest from the school to to utilize. You know, not necessarily the. Obviously, yes, they do have a library. They call it a learning resource center or a media center. But you know. They may want to avail themselves, you know, to Michelle's point, because we also have the resources of the main library. You know, maybe there's some special projects, and we can bring in some additional resources that they can't normally access through just one school. Also, because you know, this is a partnership with the Sunnyvale School District as a whole. So even though it is on Lakewood campus, it's possible that the school district may have some figure out the means to bring, you know, other schools, you know, field trips, or to utilize the spaces for staff development or community meetings, right? In some ways too, and maintain that flexibility to again work with our partners and their needs as well is something we're thinking about.
I think yeah, it's great. I don't have any questions. I'm just like really excited. Can't wait to go see it.
Yep, we are too.
Thank you, Board Member Lam. Oh, sorry, Hong. Wonderful presentation. Appreciate your time and effort to have put this intense slideshow together. It was very informative. I literally transported myself to the new library. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, no, you're good. I wasn't really sure. Really echoing off of what everyone else said, this is a great presentation. I don't have a lot to add or a great deal of questions, you know, especially, you know, after hearing you know, my fellow board members' questions and then hearing you guys' answers about flexibility, about, you know, sort of the unique synergies that we can have in terms of, hey, well, you know, what does the soft opening look like? And just imagining the, you know, possibilities of this is really exciting. And it's clear to me that this building, you know, as we've emphasized a million times, has flexibility in mind. And I think it's going to serve the community really well. It's going to deliver and help to fill a hole, a gap, I think, in services that wasn't addressed until this gets open. So really excited to see that, really excited to see how it develops. And thank you again for the update.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Gary. This is now the public's opportunity to address the board on topics not listed in tonight's agenda and presentation items. The section is limited to 15 minutes and may be extended or continued after the public hearing, general business section of the meeting. Individuals may only speak once during oral communication. This board meeting is a limited public forum and board can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments during oral communication must be limited to matters within the board's authority, which is known as the board's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are outside the board's subject matter jurisdiction, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. This allows the board to conduct its business in a reasonably efficient manner and protects the rights of other speakers. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of disagreement with the content of their speech. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer. Raise your digital hand now or dial 9 on a telephone to indicate to wish to speak. Do we have... I will call on members of public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak under oral communication?
There is no one at this time.
I will now close oral communication. We're now moving to consent calendar. I'll go ahead and open public comment on consent calendar items. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer. Raise your digital hand now, or *9 on the telephone to indicate to wish to speak. I will call on the members of the public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Do we have anyone wanting to speak?
There is no one at this time.
I will now close public comment. I will now ask for a motion from my colleagues.
Yeah, I motion to approve the Board of Library Trustees meeting minutes from November 3rd.
I second the motion.
You're ready for roll call vote? Okay. Chair Jitakonda?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hu?
Yes.
Board Member Han?
Yes.
Board Member Liu? I'm absent, sorry. Board Member Lam?
Yes.
Okay, we have motion passes 4-0.
We're moving to non-agenda items and comments. The next portion of the agenda is for oral reports and announcements by board members and staff to share information. Do board members have any non-agenda items or comments? Board Member Lam?
Yeah, so I know we had briefly discussed the council's approval of $5 million of funding. If we could have a brief discussion about that, that would be great.
Since it's not specifically on the agenda, we can't have a discussion about it. However, in case any members of the board were unaware, the city council in one of their December meetings added $5 million to the library fund for that specifically for the brand for future library services. There was an existing about $15 million in there. This is not going to build a new library, but it certainly is a good step in the direction of planning for what is to come. So, you know, if there's a study that needs to be done on what it's going to take to renovate the main library, that money could be used towards that. If there's a study that needs to be done to see where a branch library could be located, where a public-private partnership could end up, those funds could be used for that, as well as some kind of design, so of a branch renovation. So that's really good news that that investment was made in the library fund. The next steps for that are going to be with the Library and Recreation Services Department and the Office of the City Manager. Once we have more information, we'll obviously come back to you with that. Your next opportunity, if you want to, discuss what your thoughts are on next steps or how those funds could be used or what you see as the future would be to attend one of the city council meetings, potentially the one on their priority projects for next year, which I think is coming up in February. We can check the date for that. And that would be your time to lend your voice to the future of library services. There's also an opportunity, of course, at any council meeting or as you talk with your council members privately.
Great. Well, thank you for the announcement, Michelle. So you mentioned the City Council Priority Projects Workshop on February 26th. Is that something that we as board members can attend collectively to voice our support for modernizing the library together?
There's a time for public comment. So you could individually speak during that public comment. It certainly wouldn't be a time for you to all to come together because that would show that you've prepared something collectively. And unless that was done during a meeting, that would really not be the way to go. So during public comment, it's your opportunity as individuals to address the council.
Got it. Okay, so we're not supposed to all show up like a band and...
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I'm glad that
but we... But you can wear your outfits.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Can I add to that? I understood that the council members are now all proposing their project ideas, and that will be made once they decide on the certain number that they've, well, once they make their proposals, that's going to be made public. And if anything is somewhat library related, we can comment. I mean, we can comment on anything, but this is also our chance. If one of the council members comes up with a program that we don't know about that they think would be something for the library, and whether, you know, we can voice our support or we could say we don't think it's appropriate, whatever it is. I mean, so we have to like be aware and like look out for when those are announced and if there's things that we think are worth, you know, supporting, putting our voices where, you know, we make the public comment before the meeting because they'll be published before.
Yeah, the board did endorse one project or one priority project, one potential priority project for the council to consider back at the November meeting. So that one is also on a list of options for the council to mull over.
Right. I mean, I was thinking of exactly kind of your comment there in the sense that since we've already publicly agreed to that that priority back in November, like it would be stronger for us to reinforce our support for that rather than, let's say, me randomly saying, oh, you know, we should do XYZ, and then, you know, another board member commenting on some other random thing. So I guess, you know, it sounds like it could be appropriate for each of us to speak as individuals and just double down and say, hey, that thing that we agreed on in November, like we're still supportive.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. You know, as a body, you have advanced this recommendation, which sort of carries the weight of this body and your voices in that official capacity. But yes, it would be appropriate for you to speak on your own behalf and say, you know, publicly that you as an individual then support specific items that you would like the council to consider or to, you know, to, you know, and that information. So yes, you could all say, you know, and comment on your own behalf about and lend your support to something that has been signaled, you know, to show again that you are amplifying that movement from the board.
And the minutes you just passed a few minutes ago were the minutes from that November meeting, which says the expansion and urgent modernization of library services to include renovation of restrooms at the main library and planning and design of additional library space.
And are public comments doable only in person, or can we do that through Zoom as well?
Both.
Cool. Thank you.
Any other board members? Well, thank you, board member Lam. Does staff have any non-agenda items or comments?
Yes. Happy New Year again. We have gone through just a really amazing winter early winter time of programming at the library. Not surprisingly, when we look at the calendar for January, there are too many amazing things I could possibly highlight to you all. But I did want to call out a couple things. Winter programming does continue. We still have some exciting winter programs coming up. The other thing I want to highlight is there's a few days left in our winter reading program that, of course, is available for children, teens, and adults. Adults, remember, you can earn a $5 Friends of the Library gift certificate. Thanks again to the Friends for generously supporting our winter reading program. It's just like summer reading program, but what we've done is with the shorter time frame, you set your own goal of what the challenge is for you and on books you'd like to read. The program does end on January 12th, so just make sure to get registered online and log your reading there and then come in to claim your prize. January actually starts a really interesting season where we're actually going to be kicking off some larger scale seasonal, I guess we could call them, programs. But a couple things I want to highlight because they'll occur before the next time we meet is Silicon Valley Reads. Silicon Valley Reads is something that we participate in along with many of our other local library partners. This year's Silicon Valley Reads theme is Bridges to Belonging. And so there will be a large variety of programs that the sort of Silicon Valley Reads as a whole is hosting with author talks from the various different books that have been selected for this year's theme. But locally, we have a couple programs that we're, you know, doing to sort of fill in the gaps there. The first one is a program called Starring the Bay Bridge. We're taking it a little bit literally in Bridges to Belonging. We're going to talk about the Bay Bridge as it's appeared in major films. So look for that on January 28th. And then also a couple days after that, a teen poetry workshop on January 31st, focusing on helping teens to write poetry, focusing on family and cultural heritage in particular. We also have our first Lunar New Year program starting in this month in January with a calligraphy workshop for adults on January 12th. And then, of course, many of the other Lunar New Year programs will continue in the month of February as well. But didn't want to miss that because it is starting. Our season for those programs is starting now. So please do check out the calendar. There are a lot of amazing programs going on. I think one thing newish that you'll notice is an increase in online sort of like virtual speaker programs. We've recently partnered with a consortium where we now have access to a sort of a library of virtual programs that can be hosted. We can host them online and, you know, some really, really great speakers. And so we're just starting to start filling the calendar with those. One of the nice things, echoing back to something we talked about before, with limited space resources, increasing the number of online and virtual programs is something that we are looking at as ways to continue to offer a broad variety of programs to reach all the people in our community with really great programming in ways that are cognizant of our resource limitations.
One of them is that's coming up that's going to be very timely. There is going to be a conversation with Liz Moore. She's going to discuss her book, The God of the Woods. This book came out last year and, you know, has fallen off in popularity, of course, and since it's been out. But it was mentioned during Taylor Swift's documentary series because she was listening to it on audiobook. And all of a sudden, the holds numbers just jumped overnight. So, again, a great way responding to the popularity of that in the last 2 weeks, and there'll be a program on the 28th.
Thank you. The meeting is now adjourned at 8:21 p.m., and I want to thank everyone for your participation in tonight's meeting.
Thank you.